or power to the grassroots. So when the Democrats asked for Bernie Sanders' email list, I mean, it's not like, you know, Cory Booker can use that list and someone who gave $10 to Bernie Sanders is going to be enthusiastic about giving money to someone who, you know, votes with big pharmaceuticals or someone who votes with Wall Street or someone who, you know, helped smear Keith Ellison for his very moderate views on Israel-Palestine. I mean, I don't think that list is a magic tool for the Democratic Party. If they want small donors like that giving to them, then they should sever the link to the big donors. No one's going to be, you know, no one who's poor or working class is going to give you money, and they feel like their money isn't going to influence
the big
donors. Zed, we
have 5 seconds. The significance of Ellison being made the deputy co-chair of the DNC, a new position.
Well, it's not a position in the bylaws. It seems like sort of an advisory role, but, it's probably positive that he'll be staying in Congress now.
I want to thank you for being with us. Zed Jelani of The Intercept will link to your piece. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Democracy Now! Produced by a remarkable group of people. Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gatas, Dina Geisler. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Outside the Frame film screening, The Lost Boys of Portlandia. This screening takes place Wednesday, March 1st at 7 p.m. at Hurava Shalom, Portland. The Lost Boys of Portlandia is a film where homeless youth in Portland, Oregon, debate if and how to return to mainstream society while creating their own film version of the iconic story of Peter Pan. There will also be a panel discussion with youth who have experienced homelessness after the film. Again, that's The Lost Boys of Portlandia, Wednesday, March 1st at 7 p.m. at Havra Shalom, 825 Southwest 18th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the August Wilson Monologue Competition Regional Finals on Monday, February 25th at 7 p.m. at the Newmark Theater in Portland. 12 Portland area high school students will perform monologues from August Wilson 10-play American Century Cycle, and two will be selected to go to the national competition. There will also be a DJ spinning blues, jazz, R&B, and hip-hop. Again, that's the August Wilson Monologue Competition Regional Finals on Monday, February 25th at 7 p.m. at the Newmark Theater, 1111 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This week on Progressive Spirit, we discuss something that is common to families: adult children saying no thanks to their parents' faith.
Does a preacher father lose his son when his son loses his faith?
Bart Campolo talks about the book he wrote with his father, Tony Campolo, Why I Left, Why I Stayed. Conversations on Christianity between an evangelical father and his humanist son. Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
Good morning. Today is Monday, February 27th, and you are listening to your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis and areas around there, and always in the airways and via the worldwide web. It is kboo.fm. Today is Monday, and I am Cecil Prescott for More Talk Radio. We will be speaking later this hour with Lei Ming, who is the author of a book entitled about his transitioning from female to male, And actually, Ray has written quite an interesting book, Life Beyond My Body. He is a trans male from China, and he is in the United States. Talking about his transition and what it's like to be a young trans man. It will be a fascinating interview, and we're waiting for Ray to join us in a few minutes. In the meantime, let me invite you to also be willing to participate in our morning conversation, and I'll give you all phone numbers, 503-231-8187. Gosh, I'm running so fast this morning, and I did not even have coffee. I can't drink coffee because it makes me even worse than I am now. I want to talk and have your reflections on a couple of things. Just now we heard Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez in Democracy Now! Highlighting several points. One related somewhat to our main topic this morning, talking about the potential boycott in North Carolina and because of the anti-trans legislation and mindset in the legislature. What should be the proper response to these type of endeavors in our government? You are well familiar with the rollback of the, for lack of a better term, by the Trump administration of allowing people in public schools, students in public school, to go to use the bathroom that they feel most comfortable with. This anti-trans fallback is maybe a sign of things to come. What is the proper response for those of us who what part of the resistance, as it's so commonly called, should do, not only in terms of national legislation, but how to respond to issues here locally. Also on Democracy Now!, we heard the interview with the Reverend Barber and his perspective. He is a resident of North Carolina, a leader in the Moral Monday movement, a response of people of faith and people of goodwill generally towards the repressive legislation and action of that state. More and more these days we see the impact of the national legislation, national election, continuing to have a role on local and state actions. Here in the state of Oregon, which voted against Mr. Trump, we did have an election where, for the most part, it was a blue state. But our Secretary of State was elected, who was Republican, Dennis Richardson. And I'm told that he will be part of a so-called freedom rally this week. And there are people with people such as Michael Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas, who is a powerful, influential member of the so-called religious right. So our Secretary of State will be part of this freedom rally later in this week. And want to know what your response is. So give us a call. How should people deal with this new era that we find ourselves in, where the forces seem to overwhelm against changes for change? Also noted that the Democratic National Convention Committee held an election for their party chairperson, and the candidate of the mainstream, the old guard, former Labor Secretary Tom Perez, won against Congressman Ellison. Mr. Ellison was thought of and was indeed a supporter of Bernie during the primary, and was thought of as representing the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, and Mr. Tom Perez was thought of as representing the mainstream of the Democratic Party. So is change possible in the National Democratic Party, or also some issues that we could speak about this morning? So let me line them out again and hear your impact, because it's early enough for you to give us your thoughts. 503-231-8187. One, in terms of the way in which we should respond, resist the Trump invasion of all of our lives, and perhaps your thoughts on whether the Democratic Party is something we, or those in the opposition to Trumpism, should put all their forces in. You are listening to your community radio station, KBOO.N, community radio. This is Cecil Prescott, and I can be reached right here at 503-231-8187. Now, I laid out a few topics that I'm interested in, but, you know, I am open to thoughts that you might have. I found out this morning when I came in the studio, some news about the Academy Award and how those winners were chosen or not chosen, and the snafu that happened, I believe, that Derek was sharing with me about the Best Picture Award and how the film that was, you know, which was very curious, and I must admit I did not see either one, but I'm told that La La Land was sort of like how white people save jazz, and Hidden Figures was about how black women saved Nasser, but there was a lot of funny things that happened last night at the Academy Award. In the meantime, there are local issues that are all over the place that we need to address. I just read this morning that many of you have been involved in the fight for renters' rights, and familiar with that large complex in North Portland, which was evicting many of the, it was a 72 unit apartment complex in St. John, and people received notice last month in December, actually, about being evicted. The Titan Manor included 59 school children whose life, as well as their families, would have been disrupted. A couple of things happened. Apparently, one was, remember, within recent weeks, the city council passed a law which would require the landlords who evict tenants for no cause eviction to pay them to move out. It seems apparently that the landlord has rescinded its order. People are still looking over it. You know, many people throughout this city and the community came and supported the people. As of now, the eviction notice has been rescinded. What are your thoughts about that? Has it, in fact, been a change of scene in the city council with the new city council person and also the ability to help people stand up? Is there a change in the city council? Similarly, in talking about the city council, some of you might have convictions about how the police one person's perspective to be somewhat wishy-washy on how he or should control the police force. So give us a call on these or other issues that you might have. 503-231-8187. And we would respect and like to hear your views. One person's voice is not very good. Two people voices are better, and three people voices is even greater still. So here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM, give us a call and share what are your thoughts this morning. Coming up later on KBOO at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour, How to Resist Trumpism. A review of the song, The Stubborn 1000, about the 1985 Watsonville canning strike, and a revisit to Sinclair Lewis' 1935 novel, It Can't Happen Here. Last week I was on the bus, and the person sitting next to me was reading that book, Sinclair Lewis' It Can't Happen Here. And we had a short conversation, and she was telling me how it may evoke things now. So stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour and hear that review or revisiting of Sinclair Lewis, 1935, It Can't Happen Here. Wow, how things remain the same even as things change. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Ear Cascadia, which features headlines, interviews, and commentaries about the news that is happening all around us. At 10:15, it's Locus Focus. Barbara Bernstein welcomes Columbia River Keepers Conservation Director to discuss protecting Oregon's achievement in climate action. At 11, Disability Awareness presents Making Contact, an intimate look at the dynamic and complex relationship of giving and receiving long-term care. And at 11:30 on Voices for the Animal, we will meet local animal champions with a visit from Humane Oregon. We want to thank you, KBOO members, for your continued support and generous support of this, your community radio station. And I want you to know that if you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the donate tab. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and I would like to hear from you. 503-231-8187. Changes in our nations, in our state, and locally. We touched upon just briefly this morning about the pushback from landlords who are raising rents and giving no cause evictions. Has the recent law passed by Portland City Council made an impact? Are you receiving rent increases, or are they below, what was that, 10%, I think, before they have to pay for your moving? Share your thoughts on that and the power and the influence of the city council, and perhaps some of your thoughts on the newest city council members, the mayor and Chloe. Also, we talked earlier about the pushback from Trumpism, and how people are struggling against that, particularly against the anti-trans bathroom bill the pushback that the administration made against the presidential executive orders of the past administration? And is this a time for the trans community and their supporters to stand up and to push back? Is that being done, or is it being done strong enough? If you are a trans person or an ally, give us a call and share with us perhaps some of your thoughts about this and what people can do. We're waiting this morning for our guest, who is a trans man, Ling Ming, who goes by his English name, Ray, who has written a book about what it means to be trans in China. And he is currently on a U.S. Book tour talking about his life and what it means for him, certainly to travel to the United States and discovering what he says is a brotherhood of trans men. He has spoken in several places in this area and has written a book, Life Beyond My Body. That is a book in which he talks about his life and his journey. And what is unique about, well, among the things that are unique about it, as we talk about the oppression and the struggle of trans people, he is a trans man of color, and so often the face of the trans community, at least publicly, tends to be white. It is interesting to hear, to read about his journey and the challenges he faces as a trans man of color in a society that remained several steps behind where we are in this part of the United States. Our numbers again are 503-231-8187, and we'll wait to, I'll continue to share news and items until we receive a phone call from you, and I will gladly wait. I'd be silent as you share your thoughts. One thing that I had a challenge last week with, talking about the way in which people are struggling with housing in this area. I was in a room, a community meeting, with those who are landlords and those who are renters. And one of the questions that came from someone was, are there challenges in which landlords face that makes it difficult for them not to keep rent low? And are there ways in which landlords and tenants can come together to challenge what remains a very, very difficult time for us? I want to read for you this letter and hear your responses. Now, this is several months ago that this person wrote in Willamette Week, and this is their challenge. They write, "I live in Southeast Portland and pay $1,100 a month for a two-bedroom townhouse. My landlord offered to renew the lease, provided I pay an additional $200 per month. Is that legal?" Well, now we know that the law has changed in terms of what is permitted, in terms of One, the old 30-day notice has been expanded to 90 days notice, and that if a tenant receive an eviction notice, the landlord must be responsible for the moving costs. But people continue to struggle between food and hospital costs. And work very difficult. So this is a difficult time for many people. Again, let's hear your thoughts on this or other issues. 503-231-8187. And let's go to a caller right now. Good morning.
Hello, Cecil. This is Jamie. How are you?
I am well, Jamie. How are you?
Great. I wanted to share some news on the housing front and the immigrant rights front. For those folks who didn't hear, one of the impacts of the new ordinance that the city council has passed that mandates the landlords pay relocation costs if they no cause evict or raise rents more than 10% in a year is that the Titan Manor apartments, which were facing a total no-cause eviction of dozens of families, primarily Latino families, in North Portland, has backed off from that eviction because of the fact that they would have to pay somewhere between $3,900 and $4,500 per family that they evicted.
Yes.
And so just yesterday, I believe, we learned that no-cause eviction has been stopped, at least at this point. The new developer that bought up the place and that was going to evict everybody and raise the rents or whatever he was going to do with it has taken a second look, because the city council passed this ordinance with a clause that said any situation that was in process, that it, you know, where the eviction notice or the rent increase had been manifest already was included. It was an emergency ordinance. So and so that is a wonderful victory already for tenants in a big. Dozens of families in North Portland, and this past Saturday, I was pleased to be part of a rally in March in support of another group of tenants who are facing a 100% rent increase. That's the Normandy Apartments out in the Cully neighborhood, and largely Latino population, many children, dozens and dozens of children involved in this possible eviction due to 100% rent increase.
Yes.
And hundreds of folks came out to support them in demanding that the relocation costs be paid by the owner, but that the owner consider backing off.
Amazing victory!
And it was so exciting to see the mix of people. It was led by the Normandy tenants, by these Latino families and their children, and then there was all kinds of teachers from the local school, because the school Rigler is particularly oriented toward Latino families, and a number of teachers speak Spanish, and they were just totally in solidarity with these, keeping the families where they are. And 5% of the student population would have been moving out of that school if those families had to move out of those apartments. And the Portland Association of Teachers leadership came out in solidarity and spoke, and of course, and Chloe Udalia, our new commissioner, was there and spoke, and the march was from the departments to the school. So there was this wonderful mix of tenants' rights, immigrant rights, and education, right quality education for all our children, and we can only hope that situation will also result in some kind of, the landlord backing off from that 100% rent increase.
Hey, that's wonderful news, Jamie, and also I appreciate how you identify the intersectionalities of issues and the good news that when people unite and struggle together, progress can be made. Thank you for your good work.
Okay, thank you, Cecil. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, and 104.3 Corvallis, Albany, www.kboo.fm. And we are joined this morning by the author of a very unique and fascinating book. It's entitled Life Beyond My Body. It's described as the challenges and what it means to, he's written a book about his life as a trans man coming of age in China, which has been published here in the United States. I'm currently on a book and speaking tour here. And I am so pleased to welcome Ray. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And perhaps the first question is, tell us a little bit about why did you want to write this book?
I didn't think of writing a book, but it was in 2013 because I was so lonely and isolated. So I searched the internet to see if there's anybody like me, a transgender Christian. And I found the website of Reverend David Wickley. And I wrote him a letter, but my letter was trapped because of a technical problem. Mm-hmm. And the webmaster, Lura, found my letter months later.
Wow.
And then we started the correspondence. As I shared my difficulties, she suggested me write a book. So that's how this book project started.
Wow, amazing. So let's go back a little bit. You said in 2013 you sent an email. Were you living in China at that time? Or
sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Uh huh. And share a little bit about not knowing other trans people as you grew up. Were you aware that you were trans, or did you have any language of what was going on with you and what was different and unique about you?
It was in 2003 that I first came to know that the word transsexualism.
Yes.
And it was then that I realized I was not the only one in the whole universe. It's like to discover human life on another planet. But still, I didn't know anybody like me in daily life.
And you grew up in rural China? In the country?
Yes, in the rural area.
Yeah, yeah. So 2003, you were a boy, a young child at that time, and
That was about when I was 17.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And not a boy. I was identified as a girl.
Yes.
And I lived in girl's dorm, and I had to use the girls' bathroom and stand in girls' line. But inside, I I always felt I was a boy.
Yes, yeah. Were you able to talk about how you felt inside to your family or friends? Did anyone know how you felt?
No, nobody knew how I felt, and I dare not tell anybody because even myself, I didn't know what it was. So being different made me fear, and I didn't know how to tell it. Oh. And I didn't think anybody will accept or understand.
Wow, that must have been growing up all alone and without even a language or knowing anyone. How were you strong enough to survive?
At first, I didn't think I would survive. I was suicidal. Or I wanted to commit suicide when I was in 11th grade.
Yes.
Maybe when I was 16.
Yes.
Until I found Christian faith, so that helped me through go through these difficulties.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. I'm speaking with the author of Life Beyond My Body. Your English name is Ray.
Yes.
And if a person wants to find your book, it would be your name, Lei Ming?
Yeah, that's my pseudonym.
Pseudonym, yeah. For the book. Mm-hmm. He is on a book tour here in the United States, the book is published by Transgress Press, I believe, and you can get it on Amazon as well, correct?
Yes, and if you want a signed copy, you can go to GoFundMe/LifeBeyondMyBody.
And it's fascinating because you can get a signed copy or did you set up the GoFundMe campaign?
GoFundMe
campaign, yeah. for his book. You mentioned in terms of the importance of your faith. I'm a pastor of a Christian church, and I wonder if you could tell how that helped you, the Christian faith, your faith helped you in your journey.
At first, that was in when I was in university, and I asked the question as, where am I from? What's the meaning of life? Where am I going? If these questions, if I couldn't find the answers to these questions, I'd rather die, because I could see no hope or joy for me, for a man as me trapped in a female body. And as the Bible says, seek and you shall find, and knock and the door will be open. It was one day I met a foreigner on the jogging track, and I went to talk to him, and he turned out to be a missionary. So I studied Bible with him, and I made my decision to accept Jesus as my savior. But at that time, he didn't know my identity. Mm-hmm. And he referred to me as he, boy. I didn't correct him because that's the one.
You were a boy, yeah.
Yeah. But until 1 year, about 1 year later, someone outed me and they changed the pronoun. And they also told me, this is a sin. God created you a girl and you are living a lie. So they wanted to help me retrieve my gender identity as a woman. So that was a really hard time for me. Yeah. I totally broke down because the faith, Christian faith, is the very reason that I lived, the very breath of life. And now because I didn't know well or his word well, so I believed their words. I didn't know how to reconcile being a transgender and a Christian, since how can I love God and at the same time go against him by being transgender, which I can't help be.
Right.
So I quit church, but until a couple years later, when I went to apply for a job, the employer turned out to be a faithful Christian, and he accepted me dearly as a brother and baptized me. That was in 2008, and it was from then I started to build my personal relationship with God, and in my seeking of God, I asked him, if you truly indeed created me a woman, you can change me. You can change me, change the way I think, change the way I act. I'm willing to surrender. But through the years, I found myself only grow to be manhood instead of womanhood.
Right, yeah. You know, sometimes that's often a conflict of Christian faith with identity that many trans people have in terms of being told that they are sinners. But I often like to remind people that some scholars think that in the Bible, where it talks about the eunuch, that those were trans people back then. And the important thing is that what you said in terms of your personal relationship with God and conversation with God, mm-hmm. and if God creates you, that's the important thing. So it's always important to remember that be true to yourself.
Right.
And love is so important. Yeah. We're speaking with Ray, the author of Life Beyond My Body. And are you having any public readings? Will you be making any more stops here in Portland where people can meet you and hear about your book?
Oh, I already had two book readings in Portland.
Yes.
The first one is in it's called Village Frame Gallery. Mm-hmm. Was my first reading. And the audience, though it's small, it was very great and it's warm. It's a good start.
Yes.
And the second book reading took place in the Beaver Creek United Church of Christ.
Yeah, yeah. And how long will you be in Portland?
I've been in Portland for about 5 months.
5 months, So are you going to stay here a little bit longer? Or I know from your GoFundMe page, you might be all over the United States.
Yeah, that's why I had this campaign. to travel as many cities as I can to share my story. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to San Diego March 7th to have a book reading there.
Yes.
And then I will go to Oakland mm-hmm. to have more book readings.
Wow. How did you find the book readings? Were you, did you know what to expect, or were you afraid, or?
I didn't know what to expect, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was nervous.
Sure.
But as I quieted myself before the Lord, I was at calm and my peace, just stripped of what people think of me, what I think of myself, and simply presenting myself as what I am. So I was totally at peace when I standing in front sharing my story.
Yes.
And I felt very happy to be surrounded by a group of people who are supporting and have empathy.
Yeah, it's amazing. We're speaking with Ray, the author of Life Beyond My Body. Ray is a trans man from China who has a fascinating story. And you may have a... give us a call if you want to ask Ray a question. 503-231-8187, and I'm sure Ray will answer your questions. In your book, you mentioned early on about, I guess it was your first English teacher, Mr. Yu, who did you meet him? And talk a little bit about that.
My first English teacher?
Yeah.
So you visited my website to read that blog?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. He was a young man. And at that time, I have a cousin who also worked in the same school and in the same office with my first English teacher. And my cousin one day told me, you know what, he referred you as that boy in the office. Always.
Always.
He said, that boy. So I learned. Seems he accepted me he saw beyond the fact of my body, but he saw the person.
Yes.
It's a boy.
Yeah.
So I liked him and he liked me. So, he also expected me to do well.
Yes.
So that's how I had a good start of English studying. And, he only taught me for 1 year, but he still showed his love to me.
To you.
Yeah.
And it sounds as if, you know, the two stories you shared this morning were how some people identified you as he. They somehow, the missionary friend and this teacher who recognized who you were inside. So I would think that would have been encouraging almost, that people look and saw, recognize you as you.
Yeah, that is really important. I found how love and acceptance, especially from your dear ones, mm-hmm. can be building up.
Yeah, that's so important. So as you is this your first time in the United States? Or?
Yeah, it was my first time.
Oh.
And I never thought I could visit America.
Uh-huh. And have you been meeting people, trans people in the United States, and have they been helping you, or what has that been like?
Yes, I have met some trans men in Portland. I found dear brotherhood in them.
Yeah. And I got gather that again from your blog. I gather that you did not know many trans people in your country, or they weren't visible.
No. I only met two trans men.
Yes.
And they are not in my daily life. Mm-hmm. I just met them. So when I lived in China, I just lived as a cisgender man. I just blended in.
Wow.
And nobody knew my past. So
you moved away from your home to like the city to live as a cisgender male?
Yeah. My hometown is in the northeast of China,
yes.
But I live in the very south of China, in Guangzhou.
Uh-huh.
So nobody knew me.
Was it difficult for you to move away from home and start living?
At first, because I went to college, so I left my hometown. Uh-huh. But after graduation, I worked in Beijing for 1 year and a half, and then I moved to Guangzhou and lived there for 6 years, and then I came to America.
Uh-huh. So when you went to college, would you identify as a girl and during college?
Sure, because my documents were female, so mm-hmm. I had to live in girls' dorm and standing in the girl lines. So there were many dramatic stories happened.
I imagine. Wow. And did you had to live, I guess you had to live in girl dorms with girls? Was that?
Yes. And
strange.
Every time I enter that girl's dorm, mm-hmm. the janitor would stop me and shouted behind me, "Hey, that boy, stop. This is girl's dorm." And I had to go back to explain to her I lived here.
Yeah.
And she just looked at me up from head to toe and looked incredibly.
Yes.
Just couldn't believe. And she had to let me go.
Yeah. So while you were in college, did you share with other students or friends about who you were? Were you alone?
Yes, I shared because I wanted to be known according to my inner self.
So, yes.
To be known as a girl just was unbearable to me. Right. So I shared with some close friends.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were supportive, some couldn't understand.
Right, right. Mm. And then you went to work and you lived, you said, as a cisgender man.
Uh-huh. Yes, after graduation, I went to Beijing where nobody knew my uh-huh. past. So as long as I didn't need to show my identification card or diploma or papers, nobody knew.
No.
Because by that time, I already took some testosterone mm-hmm. pills, which helped me look masculine and deepened my voice.
Right. Am I correct? I think I read where this wasn't prescribed by a doctor, but was underground pills. So you had to. How did you get the testosterone pills?
Well, they were from black market.
Black market. Yeah. Yes.
I just bought it. I searched the internet. They were sellers.
Yeah. Yes. So, wow. So I mean, it's so fascinating because you're all alone. and you had to figure this out by yourself. You're a really brave, brave man. I just, wow.
Thank you. Yeah. I just, most time I was just forced to be brave, to be resourceful.
Yes, yeah. And all alone, so like, you had to do research about finding the pills and on the black market, and did you have anybody to talk to help you navigate?
No.
Wow.
I didn't even know what my health condition is.
Yes.
There are no health care for transgender people in China.
Right. So how did you get to the United States in terms of your how did you get to the United States? There's so many questions I want to ask. And in terms of your health, did you ever get proper medical care in China? Or
okay, first question,
how did I
came to America? First, we need to solve the problem of visa.
Yeah.
It was almost impossible for me to have a visa.
Right.
Because I was jobless. Mm-hmm. I was a freelancer. I had no stable income. I had no house, no wife. So, but it was almost a miracle.
Yes.
The interviewer just asked me a few questions, mm-hmm. and then I was told, your visa's approved.
Wow. Amazing.
It was amazing.
Okay. And, we're going to hold there because someone wants to talk to you. So let's go to our caller. Good morning.
Cecil?
Mary Jane? Yes.
Yes. Oh, good morning, Cecil and Ray. Yeah, I just want to make a comment. I am just so happy that Ray is still here to share his story with all of us, and we can all learn from it. I have a few Asian friends, and I know in the culture it's things are kept very private, and it's I'm learning over the years from contact with my friends, but I know in China it's just very, in Taiwan also, just very private in your culture. And so I'm hoping you talking and coming out to people, you're sharing your experience, and it will help a lot of young people tell their truth and come to their true self. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Goodbye. And you're very brave. Thank you.
We only have a couple more minutes, and I want to talk more and more, but what do you plan to go back to China or stay in the West? Or
I have to go back to China this September because mm-hmm. my business traveling visa,
right,
which does not allow me to work here.
And when you go back to China, do you know what you will do? Or
if my financial condition allows, I would like to do some traveling around my country and keep traveling journals and to do some writing, maybe thinking about writing another book.
Yes.
Based on what I learned in America.
Yes. Fascinating. Hopefully before you leave this Portland in March, San Diego you going to, you said?
Yes.
You'll be have some more appearances, and if so, I will certainly let people know so they can take some time to talk with you and get your book. And thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. You are my hero for today. You're such a brave man.
Thank you.
So if you're interested, and I know you are, go to Life Beyond My Body.
Go to GoFundMe/LifeBeyondMyBody. You can get a signed copy.
So do that. And thank you, Ray, for joining us this morning. You have been listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour, and I hope that you are as inspired as I am from Ray's story, and go and do something brave for someone else. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for a more fascinating program on your community radio station, KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board meeting will take place Tuesday, February 28th at 5 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Outside the Frame film screening, The Lost Boys of Portlandia. This screening takes place Wednesday, March 1st at 7 p.m. at Hurava Shalom, Portland. The Lost Boys of Portlandia is a film where homeless youth in Portland, Oregon debate if and how to return to mainstream society while creating their own film version of the iconic story of Peter Pan. There will also be a panel discussion with youth who have experienced homelessness after the film. Again, that's The Lost Boys of Portlandia, Wednesday, March 1st at 7 p.m. at Hurava Shalom, 825 Southwest 18th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is a good old song called I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground. Sometimes you ain't what you think you want to be, but dadgummit, be satisfied, because you ain't what you don't want to be, and if you ain't what you don't want to be, you don't want to be something you ain't. That's good English for you, boy.